Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Final hour of Grant and Danny kicks off each and every day at 1 o'clock with the big one, the biggest story in town today, of course, that is that the Nationals are getting ready for Division Series Game 1 with the Dodgers. First pitch tonight is 8:30. We've got a full preview coming your way this hour. We've got a pregame show tonight, you and I, Danny, that starts at 6:30.
Indeed.
We're going all the way up to 8 o'clock before we hand things over to Charlie and Dave.
Excited about that, obviously. We'll have it broken down for you from all angles. Who you might see tonight for the Dodgers, Nats lineups. We'll probably by that point have seen the playoff rosters to kind of go through that. We'll get you set for the entire series as well as this evening's. I don't want to say, I mean, it's in a five-game series. They're all important, but you win game one, you got a much better chance of winning the series. The history says that.
Walker Buehler, the start tonight for the Dodgers. Patrick Corbin gets the ball for the Nationals. Both were 14-game winners this year with almost identical ERAs. Buehler 3.26, Corbin 3.25. Let's go to the Mattress Warehouse hotline, get a couple of thoughts on the Redskins from our buddy Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Michael, the Redskins' quarterback situation would typically any other week just dominate the headlines in this town, but with so much going on, it's kind of on the back burner. Haskins not ready, McCoy not quite healthy, Keenum probably unavailable. What's going to happen?
Well, don't forget Jay's status too, which I think overshadows Jay's decision on who the quarterback is. If he's not around, of course, the quarterback carousel once again. So I certainly agree with heard the Craig Hoffman report there. Craig is spot on, as he usually is. Colt McCoy is your guy. I think the big question that we all have, I'm not trying to be mean to Colt here, but it's the thing we got to say out loud. Can he make it four quarters of football against the New England Patriots?
Fair question.
Clearly been injured, been coming back from this injury, didn't get a full training camp, has been really working to get himself back in shape. I don't think it's a guarantee that this guy makes it four quarters on Sunday.
Case Keenum is on the practice field today. As of a minute ago, we just found out with no boot, according to some of the tweets coming out of Ashburn. Would there be any chance he starts over McCoy if he's healthy, or is he being supplanted by McCoy as much as anything else based on performance?
There would be no chance he would start over McCoy. The big question to me is if he's healthy or close to healthy, who's active on Sunday, who's up. And I think there's a very compelling case to make. I would, for one, would make it that throwing Dwayne Haskins to the Wolves as Colt's backup, if he has to come into the game, that's going to be a bad situation. A guy who's playing with a playbook that's not designed for him, who didn't get the reps this weekend practice, going against the team that's maybe better than any other team in football at disguising its blitzes, getting after the quarterback, making big plays happen. That's unfair to the kid. On the other hand, if you go with your active roster being Colt 1, Case 2, that would seem to communicate something as well. And that would, of course, be open for interpretation as well. And three quarterbacks active would just be a big old giant mess, boys.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch with us here. I know the intrigue's about the quarterback spot, and rightfully so. But I can't figure out how this defense is this terrible. Through four games, on third down, a completion percentage of almost 88% allowed. That's more than twice what the team leading the league is allowing. The third down conversion rate is astronomically poor. They are staggeringly bad on third down. The defense itself is terrible. I don't expect it to get any better this week. How are we here? That was supposed to be the strength of the club.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. And so, explain it first and then whose fault it is. You've got a lot of these third down plays where 10 guys on the defense are running one formation and one guy on the defense is running something else. You got 10 guys running a cover four. You got one guy in man. You got 10 guys looking for one thing, one guy looking for another, or two guys looking for another. It's wildly disorganized. Now you say two things. One, Let's point the finger where it needs to be pointed in these situations. Greg Minuski, defensive coordinator, guy they tried to replace this offseason. So, you know, certainly start from an interesting point there, a guy who almost got replaced, but hey, you can come back, but, you know, maybe we kind of sort of believe in you, maybe. But also, you know, the reports from in the building and what I know from talking to defensive players, this is not, Greg Minuski runs a very complicated defense, but this is not a matter of he is making these guys swim in too much minutia. This is the case of, you know, that the signal comes in, the signal gets called around, somebody doesn't get it. Somebody doesn't understand the signal. We're not talking about, like, this is kind of stealing third base stuff. It's on or it's off. You know, we're not talking about performing brain surgery here. So some of that has to fall on the players, and some of that has to fall on the players to do their jobs and make plays and win one-on-one matchups, and especially, you know, in that secondary, you know, covering a guy and you know, not holding a guy and the little things that win football games and don't lose them for you. So I'm pointing my finger all over the place. But you're right. That's been the story of the year, in my opinion, is just how badly they've underachieved. That's really contributed to this 0-4 start.
What player, Miguel, has been the most disappointing to you through four games?
Well, I think you'd probably start with Josh Norman. I know that so many of these coverage things are unfair to Josh Norman, where, oh, you know, he was expecting safety help. The safety wasn't there, wasn't the formation. And those things are all completely legitimate. Craig Hoffman will come on your station and break them down. He's very smart about that sort of thing. But also the reason you make $15 million, the reason you're on Dancing with the Stars, the reason you can come to a press conference and say, I'm the best cornerback in the NFL, is because you can make plays happen. You disrupt games. You make up for those mistakes. You catch your guy. You run him down on the open field. Those are the things the best cornerback in football does, and he's not doing those things right now.
15.5 points is the spread for the Patriots. I mean, we don't normally with you get into like the gambling lines or whatever, but I am curious, would you take the Redskins in those points? Are they going to play New England close, do you think, in any way?
No, I think you're looking at, you know, your winning scenario here would be the Patriots are up 3 touchdowns at halftime, take the foot off the gas, maybe a late touchdown sneaks you inside the margin. That would be the only thing I would be scared of as a better. Like, Belichick's very good at getting his teams fired up week in, week out. The Redskins are very bad at playing football right now. This quarterback situation is not contributing. The only thing I would say is, if this is Jay's last stand, and hence that makes this Colts last stand too, if this is their last stand together, they've been together 6 years now, they know each other, they know the ins and the outs, they are going to do everything. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at this. I'm excited to see what kind of plays get run, what kind of, you know, tricks and stunts and whatnot, and I don't know if the Patriots are the right team to do that against, but it's going to be a kitchen sink kind of game on Sunday, I would think.
If they lose big with Cole at quarterback and Jay loses his job after the game, and I hope that's not the case because I never want anyone to lose their jobs, but there would be something poetic and almost romantic about Jay Gruden going down with Colt McCoy in his final game as the guy that
it's
basically
a movie, you know?
He's just kept him around and wanted him on the field for years. It really would be the perfect ending.
And I think the great what if to me, I always go back to that very first Jay season. Colt McCoy wins Monday Night Football in Dallas. Everything's going well. They're not at 500 yet, but they're going to Minnesota. They got a chance to generate something for the season. And that week, Colt McCoy, hot hand who Jay Gruden likes, is mysteriously benched for Robert Griffin III, who's coming back from injury.
Very mysterious.
And gets his job reclaimed. Very mysterious circumstances.
Such a mysterious thing.
And they don't win in Minnesota. It's a tight game. They don't pull it out. Robert actually didn't play terrible that day. But my great what if is, what if Colt had been the quarterback? What if they had pulled off 2 in a row? Would Colt McCoy have been the one who got the Kirk Cousins contract? I don't think it's unthinkable.
So what do you hear? I mean, every time there's the mic gets cracked, Stephen A. Smith is like, I'm here with various whispers that Jay Gruden's getting fired tomorrow. It's been out there for a couple of weeks. Is this really the week that it happens and you give Kevin O'Connell, interim coach, a soft landing spot with Miami coming up, even though they're probably, you know, it's a pick 'em game at this point between these two bad teams? What is the latest? What are you hearing regarding Jay Gruden?
Well, I think the quarterback's going to be a big part of this, too, assuming they lose Sunday. We're all assuming they lose Sunday. Let's just level with ourselves. I'm excited to go to the baseball game that night. I think that'll be a lot of fun. You look forward and you say, probably need to start Haskins in Miami. You probably need to start Haskins the rest of the way. because you're going to have a really good draft pick next year. There's going to be a good quarterback available to you when you pick next year. You need to figure out what Haskins is, and you need to figure it out sooner rather than later. Jay's right. Jay's right. Haskins isn't ready. And Haskins isn't going
to
be ready.
Are you allowed
to
start Haskins? You played him this past week, and you set him up to fail nefariously.
You got to find a way to set him up to succeed. You got to find a way to get him down to Miami, get him a win. Because here's the thing. You're going to have a high draft pick, and you need to know whether you need to draft a quarterback or not next year. And that's unfair to Haskins, but that's the situation right now. And it's the coach's job to get Haskins ready to play and put him in a position to succeed starting next week after this Patriots bloodbath is over. And if Jay's willing to do that, I think that's as compelling a reason as any to move on and start planning for the future of this franchise.
But if they play Haskins against the Dolphins, what's Lewis Riddick going to say?
You certainly can't say you're setting the kid up to fail. You're giving him the soft landing spot of all softest landing spots. They're going to be favored to win the game. You're going to give him a whole week of practice. You're going to install a playbook he likes. I can't see anybody saying that would somehow be a disservice to the kid.
Michael, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it. I guess we'll see you Sunday, right? If you're coming up for the Nationals postseason game, we will get to see your handsome face with our own two eyes. Thank you, buddy.
I will either be in a parking lot in Ashburn staking people out or at the baseball game. I've got my preferences, Danny.
Love it.
You and I both. We're all in that boat, my friend. We all know where we want to be, and we all know where we might end up.
We might have to be. That's right.
Thanks, Michael.
I'm assigned where?
Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. That really is a thing, by the way. Redskins games at 1. We'll end by 4:15 or so. By 4:30, you know, you're in the locker room doing stuff. If everything is just a normal Sunday and they lose and you just get to leave, you could probably get out of there, get done by 5:30 or 6 and make it to Nats Park for the game.
It should be fine.
If there's a coaching change or rumblings or you hear about Dan coming down from the ivory tower and having a big meeting with Bruce Allen, now all of a sudden you're headed over to Ashburn maybe.
Or if you have to cross that creek where your feet got wet or there's no human bridge or something, like Blue Shorts has left a shoe there.
Blue Shorts might find his shoe there from the other game.
You know what I mean?
Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Nats play tonight. The Capitals are 1-0. Things are looking up in D.C. sports. Tonight, Thursday Night Football, we got a preview for you with Evan Abrams of the Action Network before we get out of here on the Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The National League takes center stage. Baseball's playoff picture tonight. Two games, in fact. The Braves hosting the Cardinals. The winner of that series will get the winner of the Nationals and the Dodgers in the NL Championship Series. The Nats have never gotten out of the division series. Their fifth try at the DS starts tonight. 8:37 East time, first pitch here in D.C. Patrick Corbin and Walker Buehler. Give me your Nationals pick to click tonight, a guy that you think comes through with a big at-bat or a big swing.
Howie Kendrick is the name for me. No moment is too big for that gentleman. He has been there. He has done that, including against the Nationals, by the way. Big pinch hit single in that deciding game number 5. I like his at-bats. I don't think, you know, Buehler throwing a million with the nasty breaking stuff as he does. I don't think anything will be too much for Howie Kendrick. That's the guy I want up there. Runner in scoring position, less than 2 outs. Ball's going to be in play. He's going to get that guy home.
I like that answer. I'm going to go as Drubal Cabrera, who I was so down on when they brought him in, and I couldn't have been more wrong about. I thought he would be a bench player, would play a very minimal role. He's not a particularly good defender. He's fine at second base, and he was not particularly helpful offensively, although he'd been driving in a lot of runs. Why I like him, though, is I want the lefty-righty matchup. So Soto could easily be the answer. You could go with him. That's a little bit boring. He was my pick to click going into the wild card game, and it worked out. As Drubal is a switch hitter, there's so much added value in that in these games because everything's a chess match and you're pinch hitting, you're going righty, lefty. You know, to me, it's either Eaton or it's as Drubal. One of those two guys is going to do something. I think Eaton probably has an extra base hit tonight. I think Cabrera might come through with a big RBI. But I think both of those guys end up getting knocks and getting aboard. If we're having a pick-to-click competition through the series, we could do this. Now, me and Jim Bowden, when we're doing the LCS coverage on MLB Network Radio, we both pick a player in the game, and then you get a point for every total base that night. You want to tally it up through the series?
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to do one for each team, or do you just want to do a nat?
It's up to you, however you want to do it.
I don't want to be rooting for a Dodgers hitter. You know,
we could separate
on
the
two. On XM, it's a national broadcast, so we do it for each team. But why don't we just do the Nats?
Fair enough.
And so your pick to click for total bases tonight is?
Howie Kendrick.
Okay, I'll go Adam Eaton. You can't use the same guy twice in the series.
Done and done. So
is that cool?
I'll write that down that I went Howie.
All right.
And you went
Dar,
Eaton.
Thami, you guys want to get in on this? Let's bring them in on this. So
pick to click.
For the division series, as long as it goes, probably 3-4, but maybe we'll get 5 ops here. We're picking to clicking, okay? We can't use the same people. So you guys have to go different than us, and we can start with you guys tomorrow. But you cannot use the same person more than once in a series. You get a point for every total base. What Nationals hitter are you taking tonight?
I am going with someone who showed up big in the wild card game, showed up big down the stretch. I'm going with Trey Turner.
That's a good one.
Ooh, that's great. You know, Trey's actually really good because I always try to go lefty against the righty, but Turner turns around velocity.
Sure does.
You saw it with Woodruff. I think he's got a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. Bueller's going to sit 97, come inside. Turner can hit that. Dar?
I feel like it's because we won't have too many opportunities to do this, I'm just going to take Rendon off the bat. It's
a great strategy. See, the long game is you think the series is going 5. Maybe you wait for Rendon against, say, Kershaw or something like that. But you might just get 3 cracks.
You can only get
thing.
3 games. Like, you don't want to leave Rendon untaken.
It's not a 7-game series. We gotta go with what we got.
One thing to think about, and I think we all did okay in this regard.
Uh-huh.
But if you're going to play this with your friends at home on a text chain or something like that, you do not generally want to go with a guy toward the bottom of the order. Like, you went as low as you might want to go with Howie because you might get one fewer at-bat than
That's
the rest
right.
of us.
No, it's the thing.
So if Thom went with a leadoff hitter.
He's getting 4 ABs tonight.
He's getting 4 at-bats. You don't have to worry about it. My guy I went with might get pinch hit for tonight against the lefty out of the bullpen. It happened in the wild card
That's
game.
Right, it did.
So I might only get 2 or 3 at-bats. So Thom automatically is in a pretty good spot. Dar doesn't have to worry about being benched. Howie, I guess, could be pinch hit for defensive
replacement. Could be double switched.
You go 14 innings or something like that, Howie's not cashing in all those at-bats. But you got them all jotted down, and we will keep track. By the way, walks do not count. I just want to get that out of the way now.
Oh, whoa! I'm kidding, it's fine.
Total bases, these are base hits. This is swinging your way on base. And we're cool with not doing the Dodgers? That's fair?
That's fine. Yeah, it's fine. We're a DC radio station. We're not doing a national thing.
Here's what happens, right, is all of a sudden Justin Turner is at the plate.
And I'm sitting there going, come on,
Justin. And I picked him. And it doesn't matter, right? But in the back of my mind, I'm going, well, Nats are up 3-0. So if he gets a solo homer
it's
here.
It's fine if it's a double.
3-1. It's still up 2. I don't need any of that. I just want every Dodger to strike out every time they
do
bat.
Do not drag that negative energy into the tournament. I love it.
Best case scenario tonight is you don't see the relievers. My thought is I think you will tonight. Who comes out first? Who's the first of the non-studs? My thing is I think they want to make Fernando Rodney a thing. He's been here. He's done this. He's 42 in season. Who's it going to be? Let's say Corbin goes 5 2/3 to finish that 6th. I guess if it's finishing in, it's different because you get Strickland or Rainey for the strikeout. But let's say you start that first inning is the 7th inning. Who pitches?
Doolittle.
Doolittle against lefties?
Against lefties, because I think the top of the order is going to have 3 lefties.
I'll tell you right now.
Out of 4.
If they do that, I will stand up wherever I'm at. I won't be at a watch party. I'll probably be at my house. I'll stand up and I will clap for Davey Martinez. If he goes Doolittle in the 7th against a couple of lefties.
Now, if it's earlier in the game, it's not
that's how you
be.
Manage baseball.
If Corbin can only go 4 2/3, different story.
Right.
It's somebody else.
The 7th? Doolittle?
If it's the 7th,
go.
Doolittle.
Let's do it. I'm in on that. Who would you want it to be? I mean, lefties, righties, notwithstanding, like, who's the guy, if you take Doolittle and Hudson out for the late innings,
okay,
who do you hope they ride as the 3rd reliever of the guys that they have the option to? I'll get burned with this, I'm sure. I think I have the most faith minimally in Suero, but I've always been such a Rainey mark.
Man.
He started to throw strikes in a small sample at the end of the year. I might ride with Rainey's stuff until he, at least in this first game, until he shows that he can't do it. 99 with a wipeout slider. I think I'll give Rainey the first crack.
Dodgers are such a good velocity hitting team. Some of the advanced analytics say that. They're
What do you want to do? You want to throw? You want to throw him away with Javi Guerra?
But then, what's my alternative? Maybe I'd go Rodney, as blasphemous as that sounds, simply because I think that changeup could equalize some things. And by the way, I just threw up a little bit in my mouth when I said that. I don't trust anybody outside of the big two. And I think that's the point of this entire series.
That's why we're worried.
Right.
How about you guys? 800-636-1067. Who's your pick to click tonight? Who's going to have the most total bases? What Nats bat comes to life? Hop in on the game with us. And from a bullpen standpoint, if Corbin goes six, and let's just say they've got Doolittle set up for the lefties in the eighth or ninth, Hudson getting the other inning, who do you want to throw the seventh? For Grant and Danny, you're listening to The Fan.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Evan Abrams of the Action Network joins us in just a little bit. It is Thursday, which means we're getting ready for the start of a brand new week in the NFL. Week 5 is here. The Redskins still trying to get win number 1. Two teams gunning for their fourth win of the season tonight, the Rams and the Seahawks, an NFC West matchup. You know, rare on national TV because the Thursday night and the Monday night slate have been pretty awful early this season, and over the next several weeks actually get a little bit worse. But tonight we get a reprieve and a rare opportunity to see maybe the best game of the weekend play out. Most of us will be glued, I'm sure, to the Nationals playing the Dodgers in the division series. A couple other games that jump out at me this week, though. Jaguars-Panthers, both 2-2. Someone's going to be in trouble, sub-500, about a third of the way through the season, and another team's going to be rolling with momentum with a new quarterback taking over. Either Gardner Minshew gets the Jags to 3-2, or Kyle Allen will be sitting at 3-2. With
Kyle Allen, dude.
Three straight wins for the Panthers, and I wouldn't want to be Cam Newton if that happened.
Uh-uh.
He's been better than Cam Newton. It's not close. Now, obviously, Newton wasn't healthy when he was playing, but Newton was also struggling immensely. Something's got to give with the Cardinals and the Bengals. Neither team has a win this year.
Somebody will, right?
Someone's going to. All kinds of turmoil right now in Minnesota. The Vikings are 2-2. They're at the Giants, 2-2. Kirk Cousins is struggling a quarter of the way through the year. Stephon Diggs did a press conference today where there's a rumor that he wants to be traded. He's getting no targets because they don't throw the ball at all. They just run the ball 1,000 times like it's 1965.
Yeah, Thielen said we got to be able to throw it. Kirk Cousins apologized to Thielen on his podcast, and then Mike Zimmer said I'd rather not have him apologize. Now Stephon Diggs is doing a press conference where he says I'm not demanding a trade, and everybody's right. Confused. It's not great right now in Minnesota.
No, it's really bad in Minnesota. So they had an offensive coordinator and play caller last year who I actually really like and thinks great, John DeFilippo, who was with the Eagles and won a Super Bowl as their quarterback's coach the year before that. They threw the ball all over the yard. Cousins puts up 4,000-plus and 30 touchdowns. Thielen has a career year. Diggs has a career year. They fire him two-thirds of the way through last season because they're not running the ball enough. So now they run the ball all the time. Thielen doesn't really get many targets, and Diggs gets no targets. They pretty much, they're doing like a Ben Roethlisberger when the Steelers were winning the Super Bowl when he was like a sophomore. Like, go 15 of 27 for 176 yards and 2 touchdowns.
It's a Jim McMahon offense.
Exactly. And weirdly, both your wide receivers are furious. But in the meantime, maybe they'd be happier if Cousins is not playing well either. So it's just all kinds of bad for the Vikings. But they have to beat the Giants this weekend. Speaking of teams that must win this weekend, if you're the Baltimore Ravens and you're actually going to win the North, you play in Pittsburgh. They're 1-3. They don't have Ben Roethlisberger. You've lost 2 in a row. Ravens are 3-2. You probably feel like, okay, they're going to get where they need to go. They'll probably be tied with or maybe ahead of the Browns in the top of the division. If they lose a third straight after their 2-0 start to the Steelers, they were a fraud.
Because they lost to Kansas City and played them decently competitive.
Exactly.
Whatever, okay?
It happens.
That loss to the Browns where their defense looked terrible, you kind of scratch your head and go, is that a one-off or sign of things to come? Did Pittsburgh find something this weekend against Cincinnati, running a bunch of wildcat and gimmick stuff and Jalen Samuels tap passes to guys coming across the formation? Whatever. That's an important game for both squads. I'll add a couple in there as well. Tampa Bay all of a sudden is 2-2. They've won a couple games in a row. New Orleans, 3-1. That could be a pivotal game in that division.
And they get to play a week after beating the Rams, a breezeless Saints team. Now, I've been totally wrong on New Orleans after they lost Breeze because I thought you're going to want to get them. They're not throwing it that well. Bridgewater hadn't done a whole lot, but their defense has been great.
Yep.
Their special teams has been excellent. That's a team, man. That is more than Breeze. Sean Payton's the truth. That organization is authentic. They got a chance to get to 4-1. And how about Packers-Cowboys?
That's the game of the weekend for me. I got that one circled. Green Bay defensively is pretty good, except Philadelphia exposed them in the run defense game, in the running game. And what does Dallas do really, really well? They've thrown it excellently, obviously, through three of the first 4 weeks. New Orleans took some of that away. I think you see Zeke Elliott early. I think you see him middle. I think you see him late. I think he has a massive day against the Green Bay Packers defense. Dak Prescott has a 2016 Dak Prescott type game, because that's how you beat the Packers right now, is force them to stop the run.
Right. You're picking
Dallas in that one. It's at Dallas.
That's not really a home field advantage, though.
No.
You know, like, to me, where they play doesn't matter most of the time. There's a lot, that's like almost not quite as bad as the Redskins, but there's such a big stadium. There's a ton of Packers fans.
The Packers fans will be around.
And Aaron Rodgers indoors, I kind of like. That's the hardest game of the week to pick for me, to be honest, because the Packers, I was ready to roll with them, dude. I thought Green Bay might be one of the best teams in football, and then in their fourth game, they regressed pretty substantially.
I mean, they lost because they couldn't score inside the one, two separate drives with a turnover on downs and then an actual turnover, but still,
they
the
had
way
the
they
Eagles
got
beat, that was a battered and bruised Eagles team.
Jordan Howard did whatever he wanted.
Yeah, it was just, their defense was why I liked them. And then their defense laid a complete egg.
It did.
I think the safe pick is Dallas. I'm probably with you. But, yeah, you're right. That's a 425 national TV kickoff. That's going to be great. Colts-Chiefs, Sunday Night Football is going to be good.
It's not a bad game.
This is an awesome weekend of football. And then I'm giddy for the Monday night game. Kyle Shanahan's trying to get the 4-0 with San Francisco. My Cleveland Browns, led by Baker Mayfield, have a chance to win what would be back-to-back games and get to 3-2.
They'd be 3-2 after that horrendous start where they look like they weren't, you know, they just met each other that morning. Guys are getting kicked out of games for kicking people.
He wins against Baltimore and San Fran in a week, both of whom could end up being playoff teams.
Pretty legit. If they win that game going out, it's out there, right? It's in San Fran?
Yes.
They win that game to go to 3-2. You have to revisit the – people wanted the shovel dirt. They were very excited to shovel dirt on the Browns.
This has been my point all along. Their schedule in the first half of the year is awful. Their second half schedule is a cakewalk. If they're 500, if they're 4-4 through 8, that should be their goal. I think they get to 9 wins, not easily, but very likely. Might even get to 10.
Especially because Pittsburgh's not who we thought they were either.
Correct. 49ers, I'm not sure about. I've got a lot of questions, and I've seen plenty of them, but I haven't really watched them as closely as we'll get to on Monday night.
They got boned with that early bye week, too, by the way. That week 4 bye week, which I hate.
The Nats playoff roster was just announced. It is released. Ooh. Let's get the breaking news on who's in and who's out.
I'm PJ Elliott with breaking sports news from The Fan, powered by Radio.com Sports and brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire. Yes, the NLDS roster has been announced for the Washington Nationals. Changes from the wild card. Wander Suero and Austin Voth are both in for this series. Andrew Stevenson, Rowdy Reed are out. The National League Divisional Series roster announced from the Nationals. Suero, both in. Stevenson, Reed, they are out. From the Crop Metcalf 5-Star Sports Desk, I'm PJ Elliott, Sports Radio 106.7 The Fan.
Thank you, PJ. Rowdy Reed as a third catcher out is not surprising at all. You were not going to carry a third catcher, especially, no disrespect to him, one with zero resume into a division series. That was a one-game situation, so if you needed to, you could pinch hit Yan Gomes and run for him and then still have a catcher to finish up the game. As far as the pitching staff goes, we knew Wander Suero would be back in. How about Austin Voth?
Austin Voth
went from, I never want to see that guy on the mound in a big league game at the end of last season, to pitched really well, may not pitch in this series, but just fought his way onto the division series roster over over Eric Fetty. As a starter, he was 96. As a reliever, he might touch 97 or 98.
And is that a surprise to you, would you say? Because who would it have been over? Over Stevenson, extra bench
player?
Yeah,
I don't think it would have been Fetty or Ross.
Wasn't
like
over
that.
Those guys, right?
I think it would have been an extra bench player. So maybe Stevenson, which I probably would have been inclined to do. I might have just gone with the extra bench guy over Austin Voth, but I'm happy for him. I just don't know that he's going to pitch. Here's how I could see him having a role. You want a guy that you can throw without burning a starter if a game goes four extra innings or something like that. Like if they play 13, he comes in the 12th or the 13th and goes basically a long guy. If someone gets knocked out in the third inning, I don't think you bring him in the fourth. But because you have to go start wearing through your bullpen, All of a sudden he picks up the slack for a couple innings somewhere after the game gets out of reach one way or the other.
Or what if let's say game two just gets out of hand in a bad way? Right. Let's say it's a 9-0 game in the fifth inning. I don't want to burn the rest of my guys. Maybe that's your Austin Voth. You pick up the slack here, right? I'm not going to burn my game three starter or anybody else out of my A bullpen in a game that is out of hand. Maybe we do that. Thinking of 2012 when the Nationals lost an 8-0 game in game number two. I don't need to use all my studs here. You guys got this one. Tip of the cap. I'll reload for the next couple games of the series. Or if that's a thing.
Could be. I'm just happy for him. He's come so far, and I really was just about done with him forever at the end of last season. I kind of thought he was going the way of like Taylor Hill or Taylor Jordan or something like that, but he's not that. I mean, he actually can contribute. He can help. He can be a factor. Anthony Rendon had one of the funniest lines I've ever heard at a press conference yesterday. We're going to play that clip for you. I'll get it to you here in a second, Tommy, next segment before we get out of here. But it was just hysterical. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Just a terrible question asked to Anthony Rendon in his press conference at Media Day yesterday. Just a dumb question. So here's the question and answer. We told you we would play this audio. This is Rendon. This is outstanding. It's, in my opinion, very funny. I love Rendon at the mic.
When you see that it's the Dodgers that you're facing, the DS, mm-hmm. I mean, do you try to block out any memories of 2016? Is that a loss that sort of sticks out to you throughout your career?
No. It's in the past. I mean, all right, what happens, it happens. If, you know, you think about your girlfriend that broke up with you like 20 years ago, probably not. So... No.
You know, we have lost a division series in more gut-wrenching fashion since then, by the way.
So, no.
So, I probably got over the one from 3 years ago that's one of the five that this organization has ever lost without winning one. The Nats Red October, thanks to our friends at PVI, is on. Presented by PVI Office Furniture, fast, excellent, affordable business grows with PVI. Visit their showroom in Frederick, Maryland, or online. PVI.com today. Let's talk about some betting lines this weekend and get into a couple of NFL notes with our buddy Evan Abrams on with us, sponsored by the Action Network. If you're looking for an edge, download the free Action Network app and get live odds and expert analysis for every game. What are you thinking for tonight's Seahawks-Rams game? What's the line right now?
Hey, first of all, thanks for having me on. The line right now is 1.5 for Seattle. And the thing that really makes it interesting is where the line was and how we got here. It was basically -2.5 before Thursday night football for the Rams. And now it's Seattle -1.5. And in the offseason, it was Rams -1. But basically what we saw last week against Tampa has completely flipped this line.
So what are the causes for that, do you think? Is it just because of how bad the Rams looked this past week against Tampa Bay, giving up 1 million points and yards?
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, that's kind of how the market works. Basically, it's a week-to-week league, especially with perception. I mean, listen, there's a team that made the Super Bowl last year, but this past week, Jameis tore them up. And Seattle also, I think there's also a small factor here, which is Seattle at home in prime time. People know how dominant Russell Wilson's been in this spot, including the playoffs, 22-6-3 against the spread. He's basically the best quarterback in this spot. People know it.
Evan Abrams on Grant and Danny here on The Fan, our weekly Thursday appointment to close out the show with some of the lines from this coming weekend. The Redskins are 15.5-point dogs. Has that line moved at all? Is anybody starting to think if Colt McCoy plays and they move the football a little bit more that maybe they'll be more competitive?
It's actually, listen, this is the same story every week. Right now, it's the game on Sunday with the most betting tickets. New England is also getting 86% of the tickets, the most public side. Everyone is all over New England. And right now the line is kind of holding steady over the last few days after it got to 15.5. It opened at like 13, 14 and has just been on the rise. To me, this line will go up dramatically based on whatever Gruden's decision is, whether it's Keenum, whether it's McCoy, whether it's Haskins. But it's New England, and it's the same story every time. The real fun trend here, so this is Washington's biggest dog since 2007 against New England. And in that game, they lost 52-7, so not exactly a great point. But it is interesting that Washington's in this spot as such a big dog against this dominant team at home.
Evan, again, there's another huge line that would probably be the story of the week. Philadelphia, I'm seeing 13.5 over the Jets at home. That would be the story if it wasn't for this New England-Washington situation where we're expecting just an absolute drubbing here in D.C. Again, it's just anecdotal, but I'm sure you've got the numbers and the info. But it just feels like we're getting more and more and more of these enormous betting lines that would have been unfathomable maybe a handful of years ago in this era of parity.
It's actually insane, and I think it has a lot to do with the legalization. I think you're getting a lot more action. Now, listen, this season, you've already got, and I'm looking at my database right now, you've got, including this week, I think it's seven games of over two touchdowns. And last year, you had, let's see, you had six as well. So really, over the last few years, this has become an unbelievable trend that you really haven't seen over a long period. So especially with the Dolphins and teams like that and the Redskins, who are really just under the radar and not keeping up with the league patterns, these spreads are really getting out of hand. I mean, we're getting to 20s, right, guys? I mean, it's insane.
What's your favorite couple of bets of the weekend if you were just going to bet on two games?
Sure. I mean, if you're looking at the board, I think – and this is going to sound crazy to some people — I think the over in that New England-Washington game is an interesting spot. It opened at 47.5. It's down to all the way down to 42, 42.5. I think based on the quarterback on Washington's side, it can keep dropping. Now, listen, in Brady's career, it has been extremely profitable bet the over when the line moves down. He basically ends up covering these things on his own. On the road, it's 18-6 to the over, covering by 6 points per game. I think it's an interesting spot, especially if it gets under that 42 mark, which is a key number. Another game I'm looking at, and this is kind of ironic, as you just mentioned it, I think there's value in the Jets. That number is 13.5. It's not quite 14. The Jets have a good defense, and Luke Falk hasn't been as bad as we think he has. 20-25 against Cleveland. He was 12-22 against New England. But honestly, both those defenses, top 10 in DVOA. And Doug Peterson, this is an interesting trend. He's 5-0 on Thursday Night Football, but he's actually lost as a favorite outright after both of those, after his last two wins. So to me, that rest and coming off that long 10 days, I kind of like the points in that game.
Evan, always great, man. You make us smarter. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll see you, buddy.
Evan Abrams of the Action Network on Grant and Danny. All right, on our way out, let's make our predictions. He was talking about his. Let's make ours for the Nats and the Dodgers tonight. What do you see in the crystal ball for game one?
I don't see it going great. I think Bueller is nasty. I think the bullpens are rested and ready to go for the Dodgers. I think they wear Corbin down. Maybe don't get a huge crooked number off of him, but if he doesn't get through five, which is what I'm kind of worried about given what he did in September and over his last month plus or so, I think they'll wear him, maybe get a couple runs off him, end up a 6-4 Dodger win tonight. 6-4, I've got Dodgers.
I'll say 4-2 Dodgers. I think Bueller throws well, and I'm with you. This can be a tough task and a tall order, but I think this could end up working out in the Nats' favor if it means Strasburg throws in game two. They just have to get one of these. Doesn't matter which one.
Find a way.
You get one of the two, and you'll be in okay shape coming back home with then home field advantage. That'll do it for today. We're back at it tomorrow, breaking down Game 1 on a Football Friday, getting you ready for the Redskins, the Patriots, NFL Week 5. It's going to be a good show. Grant and Dan on the Fan.
Because tonight at 6:30, we'll preview.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.